After a playoff season last year, the Indiana Pacers have signed coach Nate McMillan to a new multi-year extension.
Ray Allen's going into the Hall of Fame, but he cannot stop talking about his past.
And speaking of the NBA Hall of Fame, John and I are each starting our own, and we're going to tell you the first five guys we let in. It is the Wednesday edition of the Locked On NBA podcast.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. As always, every Wednesday, I'm Jake Madison, host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast and editor over at LockedOnPelicans.com, and you can find me on Twitter at NolaJake.
I am John Corrales, co-host of the Locked On Celtics podcast. You can find my work on RedsArmy.com, Boston.com, and I am on Twitter, RedsArmy underscore John.
So first up is the biggest news that really has come out of the NBA the past day, and that's Nate McMillan getting an extension in Indiana. Just initial impression here, John. This is a good move for them, right?
Sure, yeah. He finished sixth in the year and sixth in coach of the year voting. He seems to work for that team, and it helps that they got Victor Oladipo at a time where Oladipo has become an all-star. So when you've got good players, a good coach is able to become a better coach. And so they've got a very good situation where it works. We've seen, it's funny because Nate McMillan has had some bad seasons over his career. He's had some very good seasons over his career. A lot of these coaches who are really good coaches, it's has to do with the quality of player and whether you connect with those players. And Nate McMillan connects with his players, connects with the good players, and they've got a good situation going on there in Indy.
We've been talking about kind of coaching a lot over the past couple of weeks. We talked about Dibbs the last week, I think it was, and you said it. It's not necessarily the X's and O's that are the most important part for a coach in like today's NBA or even managing rotation minutes or anything like that. It's connecting with your guys and getting their buy-in and getting the most out of them. And Nate McMillan is doing an excellent job of that there in Indiana. And then you kind of see maybe the player development side of things, which is always important with the season that Oladipo had. I mean, he finished 48-34, second in their division last year. And when you go back to his time at Portland, it's largely a success. This is a guy who had a 54-win year, a 50-win year there, and didn't really have that many down years other than the first 2 years. He was fired prematurely, maybe. But I think that also had to do with the fact that he just did not have playoff success. And I'm looking at him now. He's only gotten out of the first round once. That's a bit of a concern, but I don't know if that's enough of a reason to like not keep him as your head coach, at least in the beginning part of his tenure, right?
The continuity is so much more important in Indiana. Those guys, those young guys, a core that is still coming together and still trying to realize what it can do. The continuity to keep everything in place is so much more important than fishing around for a guy who might get you, what, a couple more wins? I think keeping McMillan for a couple more years at least is very important. You take whatever, it's a multi-year extension. If it's 3 years, it's really 2 years because you can fire him for that last year. Teams will pay that. But again, those situations are really the key thing to a good coaching tenure. One of my classic examples is Doc Rivers. When he left Orlando, he got fired in Orlando. Boston ended up hiring him. There were some questions early, and then next thing you know, he gets Kevin Garnett. He gets Paul Pierce to buy in. He gets Ray Allen to buy in. And all of a sudden, boom, they're off to the races. They win a championship. They're an injury or two injuries away from winning two more championships. And Doc Rivers is regarded as this amazing coach, and he goes off and gets a job running the Clippers. So that is a great example of a coach who had X's and O's. He had an ability to connect with his players, had a good coaching staff, by the way, also very important, had a great coaching staff. He had Thibodeau in there running his defense, which was amazing. So a lot of those things come together, and it's a great situation for the head coach to get a long-term deal. And McMillan has that same thing going on. A lot of factors go into team success. A lot of factors go into individual player success. And McMillan is really in a great situation.
Yeah, you know, you kind of look at his teams and there's a couple things that like really stand out. And particularly if you look at this last year with the Indiana Pacers, it's just when you look at a team and you say something like they're well coached, that team kind of jumps to my mind with it. And, you know, it's a team that doesn't turn the ball over very often, that shoots well enough, that kind of does a lot of those like fundamental things that you want to see from them. And also, by the way, his son is a assistant head coach in the NBA. Jamel, formerly with the Pelicans, now with the Suns. So he's got his own weird little coaching tree coming up too. But look at some of the other numbers from some of these other guys. You had the other Bogdanovich, Bojan over there, averaging 14.3 per game. You know, there have guys that are just kind of maybe upcoming guys. I'm not sure how to put it, and I'm saying this poorly. But also, when you look at the Eastern Conference, having that continuity, like you said, where there's maybe more of an opening than there's been in the past is certainly a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, they'll definitely their record should look better because of the conference. They should get some wins against some of those lower teams. The difference between the East and the West is the West's win total should be depressed a little bit because those games against the bottom half of the conference are going to be tough, where the East games against the bottom half of the conference are going to be much easier. So when those road trips into Orlando, down through Atlanta, those games are going to be wins most likely. So things will look great. And look, Oladipo is still finding himself. Bogdanovich, you know, they got Tyreke Evans, you know, Thaddeus Young. Those guys kind of fit. They work. You know, why not extend? Is Nate McMillan, I don't think he's ever going to win Coach of the Year. He may not ever get out of the first round. Maybe he'll get out of the second round. But for right now, he's the right coach right now. And when this team takes its next step, if it takes its next step, then maybe at that point they could look for somebody different. But for right now, this is the guy. And look, I think McMillan is a good coach. I don't know if he's at Popovich level, but
no one's going to put him in there. But again, it's a solid, as you said, it's the right coach for right now. It's a solid pick. You're not going to take backward steps with him here. And maybe you're right. Maybe he's not the guy that's going to kind of lead you to a ton of success. But to have all of that success, you need to still kind of have that groundwork laid, and he's certainly the guy that I think can definitely do it for him.
And I don't want to make it sound like he can't lead them to a championship. If they make the right moves, you need everything. You need a team that follows the coach. You need the coach who knows how to do his thing. And if they can get the right substitution pattern, if they can run the right plays at the right time and have the right players to execute those plays, then they can go ahead and they can win. But they are not close to a championship. They still have moves to make, but they're moving in the right direction. They're trending in the right direction. This is a good step, a good next step. It allows these young guys to understand this is the guy who's in charge. They have no choice but to buy into whatever he's trying to do. And anybody new that comes in knows that he's the guy. That's important. That has a lot of value.
Yeah, it's definitely a selling point in free agency too. So before we get to the next segment, which is going to drive John absolutely crazy, look, it's Wednesday. The NFL season is literally right around the corner, and I know a lot of you have fantasy football drafts still coming up, and guess what? We've got a new fantasy football show here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's called Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7. Fantasy Football 24/7 will give you the latest trends, hot roster moves, and where to get the advantage. Plus, Ethan Turner, the injury expert, is going to give you the edge in your league. Beat your friends, win some money, get that glory. Listen to Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7. All right, John, you ready to do this?
Let me get some bourbon.
Well, let's pass that all around here. I hate Ray Allen too now. So he's talking. You want to walk us through this one, since I'm just going to try and like rile you up here?
Yeah. Okay. So Ray Allen has been talking. He famously left the Celtics, went to the Miami Heat, who at the time were the main challengers to the Boston Celtics. They had just lost in the finals and they were gearing up for another run. They were at the end of their run, but they were gearing up for one more, and they had to go through Miami to get there. And he leaves and he goes to Miami. Doesn't really tell anybody. Everybody calls him a traitor. Boston turns on Ray Allen. His former teammates turn on Ray Allen. He had already had a falling out with Rajon Rondo in Boston. KG afterwards, Kevin Garnett said, when asked of Ray Allen after he left, he said, I don't have his number anymore. And that's it. That's been the end of the relationship. Now, this past season, 2018, was the 10th anniversary of the Celtics' last championship. And they went on to Area 21, KG's show, the TNT show. Rondo, Big Baby, Pierce were on there. They were talking about squashing things. It was over. Like, they were talking about moving forward and starting to open up and move past this. Then Ray Allen comes out and writes a book and basically blames everybody else for things that happened, and everything is right back where it started. Rondo will never talk to him again. KG will probably never talk to him again. Ray Allen has basically burned that bridge. And I have not been anti-Ray Allen. As the Boston guy, I am in the minority, I think. I stand firm in my belief that a free agent is free to go where he wants to go. And I never blamed Ray Allen. They had, in fact, Ray Allen was traded by the Celtics to Milwaukee, and at the last second, that fell apart. I think Milwaukee backed out. They had told him that he was traded to Milwaukee, and then they had to tell him, never mind. So I don't blame him for leaving. But now I blame him for rekindling this, because now every time he talks and every time somebody asks him a question, he just can't help but comment and put the onus back on these other guys instead of just being diplomatic about it and saying, you know, I'm moving on, I'm moving forward. He today, again, talked to The Athletic and just put the blame on everybody else. And I'm tired of it. I'm tired of Ray Allen talking about this.
So is this – he's on the verge of being inducted into the NBA Hall of Fame. So do you think this is more of just a publicity stunt, just like it was maybe last time with his book dropping? And look, we've seen people, especially in the NBA, do these book tours where they just throw some wild quotes and things out there, probably just to sell copies of books. Wasn't George Carl did the same thing where
Carl's book. Oh, what a mess.
Just like, you remember the book tour he went on though, and it's let's talk about him and Mello and all of this other stuff. It's like, I don't know. Maybe they're just throwing that in there in a book to make some extra cash, which again, I don't really blame anyone for doing. So I don't know. This one's weird though, because at this point, just going into the Hall of Fame, unless you're trying to sell a couple extra books or maybe some throwback jersey sales or anything like that, it's not exactly going to do you many favors at this point to keep talking about it.
I don't think so. If he's trying to sell the book, okay, I guess. But for what? No one's going to buy that book in Boston except to burn it. And that's just he's completely cut out this part of his history. And look, it's not great. Doc Rivers today at an event in Boston said of that 2008 Boston Celtics, quote, if I had one game to win for my life, I'm taking that 2008 group and we're going to war, because you know they're going to show up and do it together. As the years have gone on, things have been fractured and I hate it. I hate seeing it. I bring that up because that team, that 2008 team, was phenomenal.
Very, very good.
Very good team. Yeah. Perfect timing, perfect mix. The three new guys, or the big three there, was a perfect combination. Guard, a big, a wing, like everything worked. Doc hit all the right notes. KG bought into everything from the beginning. They had a trip to Rome. Everything gelled. It was perfect. That team was beautiful. Me as a Boston guy, it was the reclamation. It was Paul Pierce ascending to his rightful place to me. He's sitting there as a finals MVP. He's finally getting the recognition that he's long deserved. And to have this now be the thing when we talk about that group, it bugs me personally, because it takes away from my enjoyment of that really beautiful time in Celtics history. And Celtics fans and NBA fans don't need to have all of that bickering and all that stuff. This should be a celebration of one of the best individual seasons in Boston Celtics history. And to have all of this come up just to what? Sell a few books? Ray Allen has made a lot of money in his life. Does he need more money? Is he in that bad of shape financially? I'd be shocked. He always seemed like a guy who had it all together.
It bothers me. No, I get it. So that was that. You actually answered the next question I was going to have, which is, so does that kind of take away from your memory or enjoyment of that 08 season seeing this? And the answer is very clearly yes. And I think that's kind of interesting because I think as we all kind of – usually as you kind of get away from drama or players leaving, it's like, okay, everything's good now. But that's usually when things are kind of quiet, and now he keeps talking and bringing it up, and then that kind of transitions into the next thing I wanted to talk about in this segment is how should people really feel when maybe they're a beloved player or their favorite player or maybe even a historic player kind of leaves the franchise to go play elsewhere, and we're seeing it a little bit now with Tony Parker. I've had people asking me about it here in New Orleans of should the Pelicans retire David West's jersey now that he's officially retired, even though he hasn't played here for, you know, 8+ years or something like that. And it's kind of interesting because most people are like, okay, it's fine, no big deal. You might hate him in the beginning, boom, we've seen that before. But Ray Allen's taking this to another level, isn't he?
Yeah. Look, this is a classic how you leave versus why you leave is it colors how people see you. I'm fine with Kevin Durant going to the Golden State Warriors, but that was the team that just beat him. And now not only did he join the team that just beat him, he created this juggernaut that no one can beat. And everybody feels like the NBA results are kind of predetermined for the next few years. So everybody hates him for that. But he's an NBA free agent. Go wherever he want, in my opinion. And like I said before, Ray Allen, free to go wherever he wanted. I never was bothered by that. Players can leave for whatever reason they want, in my opinion. And sure, fans can react however they want. My only thing is, if you are going to get on a player for leaving town for whatever reason, you cannot be the same person who turns around and says, we got to trade this guy, he sucks, because that's hypocritical. And you got to understand that that's just the same as a player deciding to leave. It's the same attitude, just from a different side.
Well, you said it earlier where, you know, they traded him first. And, you know, you always see these players being like, oh, it's a business and we understand, but we hate it and all of that. And then they kind of go and do the same thing of, it's a business, so I'm going to go get to the team that's offering more money. And they leave someone's team, and that person's like, screw that dude for going and getting the bag. But like, it should be no big deal, even if it's maybe jumping ship to a rival team or a team that you're maybe, you know, Miami's not quite the same as a rival in that situation. But it's not like to the Lakers or anything like that, I guess. But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's still kind of weird where maybe it's the Durant thing. He jumps to the Warriors. And it's like, we shouldn't be mad at him. But then you kind of see the situation and emotions run hot and you kind of do get upset.
Sure. I think ultimately it's a matter of Ray Allen is a little bit of an anomaly. Guys can leave and people can be pissed. Then after a while, after they get past the initial jolt, time heals all wounds, quote unquote. And you can say, well, you know what? He did give us these great times. He did help us win. I'm just going to put the past in the past and say thank you and just move on. But with Ray Allen, I think we were getting close, and it took longer because of the circumstances around it and because it pissed off the guys that Boston fans really, really loved. Like, we love KG in Boston. We love KG in Boston. And if it pissed off KG, well, then we're pissed off by proxy. But over time, we're ready to move on, I think. A lot of us were, not everybody. But now this, just dredging it back up again and going through and just saying like, yeah, no, they're not reaching out to me, so whatever. And just talking about it in general and kind of staking out that same position, we're just never going to get past it. We're just never going to get past it. He can't come back to Boston and get like that wave, that standing ovation, like, yes, thank you for hitting those shots. Thank you for helping us make that big comeback in LA and all of that. Like, they don't win the title without Ray Allen, but nobody cares about that anymore. They just, Ray Allen's been written off.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So he is getting inducted this weekend, so it'll be interesting to see what comes out in those speeches. And speaking of the Hall of Fame, we're going to touch on that in 1 second. But look, The Locked On Podcast Network is expanding. We are going back to college. We have launched new shows all across the platform for your alma mater. This week, we've got Locked On Wolverines dropping, Locked On Seminoles. It'll help you get over those two losses there. Plus, we've already got Locked On Oregon Ducks. We've got Locked On Alabama Crimson Tide. Don't forget about the Kentucky Wildcats, the Tennessee Volunteers, and of course, the BYU Cougars. Find your favorite show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. All right, keeping in the Hall of Fame theme here, John, let's start our own. Let's each individually get one because I'm curious to see what so you kind of set this up for us where we're picking five players for our inaugural Hall of Fame class,
yeah. Regardless NBA, of position. NBA only.
NBA only.
That's we're doing NBA only because that's been the big thing. Like I was thinking about this because of Manu Ginobili, and he gets into the Naismith Hall of Fame, but would he get into the NBA Hall of Fame? So, yeah, five players, your inaugural five-player NBA Hall of Fame class.
So those are our only criteria, and we haven't talked about this because I'm curious to see where this goes. So just off the bat, what was your criteria for picking your five guys?
My five guys is just, I think, five guys who made – the biggest impact in the NBA. So, and I'm going all basically old school, which may show my age. And I'm thinking about guys who are already retired. So that's my criteria. So you want my five?
Oh, yeah, sorry. No, I thought you were just going to roll with it. That sounded good. Okay. We can just throw out a few. Let's see where we go.
Okay,
here.
So number one is Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Michael Jordan. It's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah. Number two, Bill Russell. He's the greatest winner of all time. To me, you got to have the guy. Not only that, I think the time of the NBA history where he played to take such a strong social stand, he wasn't the first black player in the NBA. He was the first black coach in the NBA, and to win a title as a coach – as well as a player coach on top of it all, I think Bill Russell, for everything that he did, everything he meant to the NBA at that time, he gets in.
So, okay. I have both of those on mine there, but continue.
Okay. My third guy is Oscar Robertson. I think he was Jordan before Jordan, and to be the first guy to average a triple-double for a season – to do it in an era where assists were almost impossible to get.
Yeah, a little bit different.
People don't understand. Like, literally, if 10 assists back then were definitely 10 assists today. But 10 assists today in, like, what Westbrook, any guy who gets 10 assists a game, doesn't matter. No way. Those are probably like 4 or 5 assists tops in the old school. They were very, very tight on that. So I think Oscar Robertson was the NBA's first real big megastar, and that first player that was just insanely great, unstoppable. So I think that he gets in as just kind of like the forefather of being awesome. That's my third guy.
I like that one. He gets in as the forefather of being awesome.
Yeah. Okay, and then my final two selections are kind of a joint selection and may show my Boston bias a little bit, but it's it's Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. Not because that was my formative time in NBA history, but because Larry Bird and Magic Johnson saved the NBA, in my opinion.
No, they 100% did. Yeah. There's no denying that, and that's something we could spend days on probably, but
yeah.
The league was in a weird spot till those two came in. After everything in college, too, and absolutely transformed and revolutionized whatever word you want to use the NBA.
Yeah. I mean, there are a ton of guys. You could pick five different guys, and aside from, like, Jordan, I think you could make an argument. You know, you could do Jordan, Wilt, Jerry West, you know, off the top of my head. You can get other guys in there that did similar things. But for me, the last two spots – Magic and Larry together, I think they're forever joined at the hip because of that rivalry that they pulled out of college, that they went to storied franchises that already had a historic rival, and that when they go back, everybody famously knows this story of NBA playoffs were on tape delay. They weren't even broadcast live.
Not just the playoffs, the finals.
Yeah, they weren't even broadcast live. And then these two guys came in and had such amazing battles and brought those two teams, historically great teams, to a level where the interest in the NBA was just rejuvenated. There is no NBA today if those two guys didn't come into the league at that time in that scenario. So for that alone, those two are in my initial inaugural NBA Hall of Fame class.
I mean, this is, we're essentially being asked to kind of like select our Mount Rushmore of
essentially,
NBA
yeah.
players, you know, but and like you said, you can pick, I think Jordan has to be on there. I don't think anyone's yeah. going to disagree with that. Like if you leave him off, I'm going to probably take issue with that. But any other four names you put on of the greatest players of all time, we're probably all going to agree and be like, okay, good list. And then it comes down to just arguing nuances with it. So I kind of liked your approach of just kind of really impactful, game-changing players. The way I looked at it, for if you're picking an inaugural class, I tried to go different eras a little bit, even though sure. so many guys overlap to do it. So in the beginning, kind of, not in the beginning, yeah, at the dawn of time here. It's, I don't know why I said that one.
But the NBA's Big Bang. You need to be like David Attenborough with that British accent. Like
I'm so bad at accents, I can't even try.
Okay, we'll skip
next time
part.
You're in New Orleans when we're out having drinks, ask me to do like a Texas accent. It is like a disaster. So that's not coming on here. For my first selection, let's go there. You know, I was kind of looking between Bill Russell, as you selected, and Wilt Chamberlain, since they overlap a lot there. I ultimately went with Wilt just for the way like the NBA had to change rules around the way he played and kind of the transformative aspect he had on the game from
totally
there.
Makes sense.
But again, you're splitting hairs and you could go either way with it. The next guy I had, and again, maybe you're a little bit later here, but I throw in Dr. J. When you talk about these guys flying around doing things that make people really want to watch, I think that's kind of the biggest thing here.
That's so awesome. That's an awesome selection because that takes into account that ABA era.
Yeah,
I'm
not
merger
splitting them. Like, I know we said NBA, but I'm assuming we
mean professional
American basketball here.
No, I love that because, well, he's an NBA Hall of Famer too, yeah. Dr. J is. But it also incorporates an era. We talk about saving the NBA. That ABA, NBA era, that was like a fracture where people didn't know. And that was a very interesting time in basketball history because you had a very black audience that was tuned into the ABA because they were playground. They were flying around. They were dunking. Everything was very cool about the ABA. And you had the very old school white NBA. And when the NBA and ABA merged, you can hear the story of when Philly played Portland. It was old school white NBA. And they talk about that. Bill Walton talks about this all the time. Versus the up and coming, like the playground, Philly, the 76ers, and they had Malone, they had Dr. J. I mean, they represented yep. kind of like the ABA in the NBA at that point. And that was a real kind of clash at the time. And it kind of forced the NBA to embrace a lot of things that it wasn't ready to embrace before. And it was a precursor to the modern NBA. So that is a very important era. I'm glad you represented it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like like we said, you can go right with almost any of these guys, but you try and pick, as I said, impactful in their time. And I think he's definitely got to be maybe of that era, the number one guy coming out of that. Again, the dunking and the flying around, that's part of what this game is today, and that's why I really included, you know, when you think about him, like what comes to mind, and it's all of that I wanted kind of in my inaugural class here. So moving on from him, the guy you had on your list, and that's of course Magic Johnson. That's maybe a little bit of the LA Lakers homerish guy in me from years past here. But as we talked about, he and Bird saved the NBA and made it what it is today and transformed the league like that. And there really hasn't been a player quite like him since then. And hopefully we will get a guy like that, because my God, if you watch some of his stuff and the things he did, it's pretty remarkable and wild. And I mean, the Showtime Lakers are such an important part of making the NBA, you know, just kind of must-see TV and an event and something you've got to go to and you can't miss. And I think that's really important to include in there. After that, it's Jordan, of course. There, you just can't have him off of here. And then, because we didn't have any specific rules, I'm throwing LeBron in there. I think he's such an important part of the NBA. Even years ago, you would have said this, that I just couldn't not include him in this inaugural class. If I'm leaving him off, there's a couple other guys I'd have to, you know, heavily consider. Jerry West is someone you maybe want to look at there, too. I think he's a guy we've maybe left out a little bit. But I don't think we can go wrong with any of the guys we really picked.
No, absolutely not. I mean, there's so many great choices. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar would be a great choice.
He's on the short list here. I even thought about like Hakeem Olajuwon and everything. And
there's so many great, like, if you're looking for historically great players, and you could look at Dirk Nowitzki even.
Yeah,
as
that's
a symbol of an international influx. If we're, it depends on your criteria for something like this. What are you trying to represent with that initial class? Are you trying to represent an international influx of what today's NBA is? Or maybe you go Drazen Petrovic or something like that. Like one of those guys, the initial guys that was kind of the conduits for others. Hakeem Olajuwon is a great one because
skilled players big men from, like that.
Yeah. Skilled big men, players from Africa.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a lot of that influence in there. So you could certainly go that route. You know, you have so many great choices that, and depending on how you frame the argument, and that's kind of why we didn't frame the argument, because you get so many different options.
I like just kind of hearing – you guys have to let us know on Twitter, because I think this is really interesting. I'd love to talk more about this with whoever wants to throw it out there. So it's at Nola Jake on Twitter and at RedsArmy_John. Who's your five guys in your inaugural class, and what are your criteria? Because everyone's going to have different criteria, and I think that's some of the more interesting parts of this discussion. Not necessarily the players you chose, but the reasoning behind why these are your five and what you're trying to maybe represent, I think is a great way to do it. Because, John, you and I could go on this probably days again.
We're going to mention, if we keep going, we're going to mention like 100 different players as potential first fives.
And we're all going to be like, yeah, that's a great pick, too. I love it. Because like, I get it. I actually like the tandem idea of Bird and Magic. They were so important at the time that they came in that it's like, yeah, maybe you kind of need to their legacies are so tied together that I don't know if it's a good idea to kind of split them apart like that now.
Yeah, I don't know how you could put one in and not have the other. But I mean, look, you can. But I just, they're so intertwined. They're basically almost like the same person.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, I mean, in terms of importance and things to do, yeah, I 100% agree. It's like one entity. So we probably do need to wrap this up. Otherwise, we'll get yelled at. But let us know on Twitter, again, at Nola Jake and at RedsArmy_John. So I think that's going to do it for the podcast today. Thank you all for listening to the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. Don't forget to rate us 5 stars, leave a comment, and follow it on social media. That's always important. And one of the reasons this stays free for you guys in 5 days a week, when there's not a whole lot of other podcasts going on, but there's still NBA news to talk about. So thank you all for listening. As always on Wednesday, I'm Jake Madison, host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Nola Jake.
I'm John Corrales, co-host of the Locked On Celtics podcast. I'm on Twitter, RedsArmy_John.
Stay tuned for the rest of the week, and we'll be back with you all next Wednesday.